Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is gaming attorney Bob Nersesian. We'll be talking to Bob in a few minutes. There's a case in Indiana involving a player named Donovan. Mr. Nersesian, do you know anything about this?
That was the quickest few minutes I've ever seen.
Then let me linger on. Bob Nersesian, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
That's what you forgot.
Now, there's a case in Indiana that...
Mr. Donovan's a pretty interesting guy. He's an AP blackjack player. But he gets in and out of the courts a lot. Back in 2010, he went all the way to the Indiana Supreme Court, where before he reached the Supreme Court out of the Indiana Court of Appeals, there was one of the coolest decisions out there yet. It was like the Houston decision out of New Jersey, only on steroids. Recognized public amusements and all that common law stuff that these casinos don't think apply to them. And the Indiana Court of Appeals said, no, you open up a place where people can go eat, where people can enjoy themselves, and you hold yourselves open to the public like any reasonable person should. If somebody shows up and they're playing by your rules, you invite them in, you smile, and you add to our community. Unfortunately, the Indiana Supreme Court decided to follow the same line of thought as the Nevada Supreme Court did in the Slade decision and said, no. We don't care about our tourists. We don't care about the customers in this town. We care only about the large casino industry and whether or not they can take money from people and how far they can go to get it. And therefore, we're going to overturn the Court of Appeals and we're going to say, yes, Mr. Donovan can be excluded at any time for any reason from any casino in Indiana. And in the Slade decision in Nevada says the same thing, that the casinos have this authority, that they can take innocent people and bar them from over 50 restaurants if it's dealing with an affiliated group. So they are essentially banished within the community just because some security guard or some pit boss doesn't like the way someone looks. This is the law we're living with, and this is the law that the courts in Indiana and the courts in Nevada, at variance with the common law, has said that we all have to suffer under. So now Mr. Donovan decides, because in Indiana there's this nice little regulation that we don't even have in Nevada, that says how you have to trespass someone for a casino. They have to give them a reason. It's a regulation. They have to give them a reason. Then they have to tell them how long the trespass is for, and they have to include a list of things that the trespassed person can guarantee the casino to have that trespass removed some years later down the road. So they send Mr. Donovan a letter with all that nice stuff on it. And the reason they said he was trespassed was essentially because if you do come in here again, you will be arrested. Yeah, it's circular. It doesn't make any sense. That's not a reason for trespassing someone. So here he is in the Indiana courts again because he went back into a casino. He goes back in and they arrest him. Okay? And he said, your letter never told me why I was trespassed. Therefore, you did not follow the Nevada or the Indiana gaming regulations, and I can't be trespassed. Seems to be logical, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, the Indiana courts, again, standing up behind the casinos, decided to say, you know what? No, you're still really trespassed, and they can arrest you. The remedy for the bad letter is to take that in front of the gaming commission and have them sanction the casino for sending a bad letter. But listen to what I just said. It's a bad letter. It doesn't do it. But they said it still does do it. But next time they send it, you can actually force them to send a better letter if you want to take the time but you're still going to be arrested. You have no cause of action for false imprisonment. You're out on the street, and our casinos can put out anybody they want to at any time just because they're good gamblers. And yes, Mr. Donovan, you're a good gambler. You play blackjack very well, so we don't want your kind to play games in our state.
What about these letters that Caesars send out, these blanket 86 letters they send to people? You get them in the mail, and it says, you are 86 from all Caesars properties everywhere.
I don't know. I would love to give you an answer to that. Again, looking to the Nevada Supreme Court, they've decided to bend over backwards to give casinos this kind of authority to allow them to oppress people who just want to, oftentimes, innocent people who are not even advantage gamblers, who just want to enjoy themselves and have a night out. But when you talk about Caesars Entertainment, look at all the venues that includes and all the restaurants that includes. That's like internal banishment within the city of Las Vegas. If you get that letter from Caesars and MGM, you're pretty much closed out of the world. If that letter is valid.
Well,
But Richard, you want to know if the letter's valid. And the answer is, I don't know.
So nobody's taken it. Nobody's tested it.
Judge Gloria Sturman has held that letter would be invalid. Okay? Why? Because NRS 207.200, the trespass statute, says that a trespass warning to be effective must come from an owner or an occupant. Okay? It comes from Caesars Entertainment. Caesars Entertainment does not own a single casino in this city. They don't own a single casino in the world. Caesars Entertainment doesn't even hold stock in any companies that own casinos. Caesars Entertainment is a subsidiary of something called Hamlet LLC, I think it is. And then Caesars owns Caesars World, Inc., I believe, which owns Caesars Operating Company, which owns Caesars Casinos International or something like that. And then then that last one is the one that owns stock in various casinos around town. Well, Caesars Entertainment does not own or occupy a casino. A letter from Caesars Entertainment, in my opinion, and as was held in the district court here, is not a letter from an owner or an occupant of a casino, and therefore, it is not operative under the trespass statute.
Do you know if that's been tested in states other than Nevada or Indiana?
No, I don't. And every state has its own trespass statute. For example, one that I find really interesting is Pennsylvania's. In Pennsylvania, the trespass statute reads not too different from ours. But then if you're arrested or charged, it expressly provides that if it is a business that is open to the public, that will be an affirmative defense to a charge of trespassing. That is, by statute, the legislature in Pennsylvania, to what it appears to me, decided, okay, well, yeah, we want people to be able to put people out of their houses or out of their picnic or wherever they might be, but we don't want businesses open to the public to be able to internally banish people from social interaction within their communities. So if you're open to the public, you have an affirmative, or anybody you trespass has an affirmative defense if you try to criminally prosecute them to say, no, you're open to the public, I can be here. I've written about this in both of my books. It appears that Missouri and Maine are similar. And California, I think, has, although nobody's picked up on it and everybody thinks that they can trespass people in California, California actually has a case called In Re Cox, which applies something called the UNRRA law in California, UNRUH. And it held, in this particular case, that a mall could not exclude essentially a biker because they didn't like how he was dressed. Okay?
Insert Ray Moore joke, but go ahead.
So, there's another case in California that talks about the ability of anybody to exclude anyone at any time for any or no reason, but that is a residential case. So you have a commercial case that says you can't exclude from areas of public accommodation or amusement in Ray Cox. So I believe the law in California is pretty well established that if you get trespassed from a casino, but you didn't do anything wrong, you can go back in the casino, card room, what have you. As I said, it hasn't been tested. And I don't think the bar in California has picked up on this case either, because people get prosecuted for trespassing there. And I don't see anybody raising this where it worked very clearly and very directly to prevent a prosecution in Ray Cox. Wow, I sound knowledgeable on this.
You do. Right. You do. Let's go on to a different subject. A
little heady, though.
See if you can sound knowledgeable about something else.
Nope.
When a sports book in Nevada accidentally posts an off number and accepts bets on it, can it do anything to cancel the bet?
Yeah. It can say, I'm not paying you. Does it work? I don't know, but, over a $75 or $200 bet, are you really going to fight it all the way through the Nevada Gaming Control Board?
Well, we both know people who have.
Yes, we have. Yes, we do. But, and I don't have a definitive answer to your question. I don't see. Their claim would be, well, you recognized it was a bad bet. I didn't mean to make the bet. This falls under a category called mutual mistake of fact, and therefore our contract is voidable by either of us, and I'm voiding it, being the casino, and therefore I don't have to pay you. Here's your money back. I don't think it works. My personal thought is you put it out there, you make an offer, it's accepted, you live by it. And the example in our talk up before this program about how, it's not as scary as it sounds, as it should be, as it sounds. The casino is not going to get killed as bad as everybody made it sound, or as our talk up to this program made it sound, because if you get that kind of rush, whoever's in charge of that sports book better take a look at what's going on for this rush on the number. And if they're too stupid to see it, then they should live by it, and it's not a mutual mistake of fact. Now it's a reasoned decision to take the bets. And if they don't look at it, and they see this rush towards that number, well, shame on them. Holy crap. An example that was given to me before we were talking here was one where both the over and the under were positive.
Yes.
And oh, holy crap. But, in reality, you go in and you try to put $5,000 on it, somebody's going to look at that and have to okay your bet, and they're not going to check the other side to see what they think you're doing. Or if there's 60 people in line trying to bet their paycheck, they're going to figure it out. It's not. So a few people win some money because the casino does something stupid. People lose gambling all the time because they do something stupid. That's part of the game.
The problem is there's no moral hazard, right? If the casino, they take shots at players all the time. So let's say they wait until the game is over. Let's say it's just a bad number, not a case where you could bet both sides and have a, and have a positive on both sides. But say it's just a bad number. There was a example where it was put at plus 800 when it was supposed to be plus 150. Well, the casino waits for the outcome to happen, and if they win the bets, they're fine, and if they lose the bets, then they cancel them.
That's a wonderful example for why when you go in front of the gaming control board after the casino refuses to pay, that you should win and that they should pay. And I think that would be the outcome. I can't guarantee it at any given time. I'm not the judge.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Video poker player is told by his host, that the host will put some money, probably $2,000, on the player's card because he's been running badly lately. When the player got there, there was actually $10,000 on the card, not $2,000, which the player downloaded. While playing the free play, the player hit an $80,000 jackpot. The casino's refusing to pay because they claim, among other things, that $10,000 of free play was a malfunction, and the malfunction voids all play. Who do you think should prevail?
What's the malfunction that they're saying?
They're
the
saying
malfunction was on the card?
On the amount. The amount should have been $2,000, and it accidentally got put to $10,000.
Okay. Was that $10,000 put on a card or $10,000 put on the machine for him? That's a material difference. If it was put on his card, then...
Or his account, which is accessed by a card.
Right. That's not the game. The malfunction that voids all pays and plays is a malfunction in the game. We don't have that here. Where's the rule that says malfunction in points on your card voids all plays and pays under the card? That would be the term that would be a question or raise a question. From what you're describing to me, it sounds like shame on you. You gave out a steak dinner when you should have put on the comp that it's limited to the
mac and
bean
cheese.
Bake. Yeah. I see no... Obviously, I make bad guesses all the time, but as you describe this event, provided that they are his attorneys or he himself makes sure to take the card out of the game or the investment out of the game, because the game he was playing was a slot machine.
Uh-huh.
That never malfunctioned. And that is the only thing that has the rules on it that says malfunction voids all pays and plays.
Very good. Moving on.
Which itself is a question.
Let's say you take out a $20,000 marker at an Indian casino. What happens if you don't pay it back? Is it the same as not paying back a marker at a non-tribal casino?
It can be. The state criminal laws apply. And the local prosecutor, not the Indian prosecutor, not Indian court, but the local prosecutor in the county where the tribe is located may well decide to prosecute you for uttering and publishing, which is doing a bad check.
My understanding is in California, gambling laws are not, gambling debts are not enforceable.
They're not enforceable in Nevada either, unless it's by a credit instrument.
Right. But they've passed those pretty strict laws here in Nevada that markers are credit instruments.
Okay, I didn't understand this part, but yeah, if markers are not enforceable in California, I don't see anybody who's going to prosecute you. Indian court can't do anything beyond a misdemeanor to you. And besides that, you don't go back. How are they going to get you?
No. I mean, my understanding is that that's why some of the casinos in California lowered their limits and lowered the amount of credit they would give people because, they had this danger of people just not paying their markers.
That's the way it was in Nevada until 1984? So, if markers are unenforceable, it's...
Listeners, don't go out and run up a bunch of markers because of this conversation. Because
who knows what
may happen.
That doesn't mean that it doesn't show up on your Experian. It doesn't mean that they don't get the word out on you. They can truthfully tell anybody in the world, he took out a marker here and didn't pay it. He's a deadbeat. And you don't think the California casinos are on OSN and everything else? They have just the same trumpeted public voice as every other casino in the country. And, yeah, once you're a deadbeat, you're always a deadbeat. Try and dig yourself out of that hole.
Very good. Moving on. In Nevada, now it's easier to become a lawyer than it used to be. They've lowered the Nevada bar exam. Passing score of 140 has been lowered to 138, which doesn't sound like much to me. And the essay on commercial paper has been omitted. Do you have any comment on this?
Well, you got me trashing the Nevada Supreme Court earlier, and you guys are killing me in my profession here because I got to go in front of these people. And as I understand it, this was the Supreme Court that did this. All right, I'll spout off as to
you do first. Know that you see these questions in advance, and you have the option of saying, "Please don't ask me that on the air."
Oh, thanks for outing me on that, Rob, Bob. That was nice, you know.
Oh, you're welcome. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Do you see the big sarcasm sign going dee 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 over my head? No, seriously. Looking at that, I think I know why they did it. I don't agree with why it was done. Specifically, Nevada has one of the lowest pass rates in the country, historically, which makes us a state with a very strong bar. Our lawyers are smart. Just to start, they had to make sure that they passed a test that was tougher than many other states gave, and that they were smarter than the average lawyers in other states. So what does this do, and why was it there? Well, some time ago, we opened up a law school here. And it is one of the... I see lawyers come out of Boyd Law School as new attorneys, and they are some of the smartest people that I see come out of law school.
We were one of the last states to get a law school. We didn't have a law school in Nevada for...
Right.
Yeah.
But now we have one, and it needs accredited, and it needs to bring students in, okay? With Nevada having one of the lowest bar rate pass rates across the board, and Boyd being the only law school in Nevada, our only law school, consequently, had a lower pass rate than other law schools. The bar pass rate for a law school is an important benchmark for recruiting and a number of other things. I think this law was passed, or this was changed in order to allow Boyd's pass rate to float on an even keel with the law schools across the country. That's a laudable goal. But at the same time, it is going to take away from the level of the practice of law in this state and also increase the number of lawyers in this state. And I hate to say this because I love my profession, but we're a cost. Looking at the broad economic picture, we are not, lawyers are not producers.
Not like professional gamblers.
Okay. Well, fair point. But I don't see the economic benefit to increasing an aggressive profession within your state that is itself a cost on the economy or a cost on transactions. And yet that's what we're doing. And also, so far as lawyers go, I'm too far along. I don't have to worry about it. But if I were a young lawyer coming out and I had to compete against 10 or 15 lawyers, one or the other, in this new community that I've just joined, I'd much rather compete against 10 than 15. They're making it, while they're going to increase the pass rate, they are hurting the people coming in, and they're hurting the people who have been around a while that these people are going to be competing with. Our low pass rate has been a boon to those of us who have already been attorneys, and now they're trying to take it away. Actually, it will be taken away.
Now, couldn't they do it more subtly by just making the test a little bit easier and still have the same pass rate and have this?
No, making the test easier would not have the same pass rate.
No.
They want to raise the pass rate.
Yes, that's what's going on.
So instead of lowering it to 138, they could just keep it at 140 but make the questions a little easier.
Well, that 140 number is the multi-state number. That's a national test. Then there's the local essays, which are state-specific. And they've made those easier, too. They've taken away the commercial paper, the possibility of a commercial paper essay, which I got to tell you is another thing that I see as a problem with my profession. I don't want to say we're dumbing it down, but there are areas of being a lawyer that are ubiquitous in the practice and also very technical. Commercial paper is one of those. And it's one of those that all lawyers will have to deal with at some time in their profession. So don't treat it like antitrust law or nuclear regulation where it would be a lawyer specialty. Instead, they are treating it as, which is what they're doing when they remove it from the broad-based test. And they say, this is a narrow area and we're not going to test it anymore. Well, people should know what a check is or an electronic check or an e-check or all of these other things that are moving around as negotiable instruments. And we're not testing on that now.
Well, I want to go, before we get too far afield, I want to go back to Caesars.
Yeah, we're pretty far afield.
I know. One of my favorite subjects, though. So there was a guy who self-excluded from Caesars in Atlantic City like 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Bob, why don't you finish up the details of this?
Well, he hit some kind of jackpot at a Caesars property in Arizona.
That wasn't even part of Caesars at the time that the guy self-excluded.
It depends on the language of his self-exclusion as to whether or not he was self-excluded in Arizona. None of us have that language. None of us know the statute he did it under. From what I am seeing, though, in all likelihood, that self-exclusion was for that specific property. And all the different states have different self-exclusion laws. I don't know Arizona's, but certainly if he's signing a paper in New Jersey, he is not contemplating any application in Arizona. So this all comes back to what you said a moment ago, Richard. It's a shot.
Yeah.
The casino's taking a shot. Yes. And it's a dirty shot, and it's a low-life thing to go for, but they're doing it. So you got to get in front of the Arizona Gaming Commission, and you've got to get them to order that it be paid or go to Indian court. There, you might be able to get into regular court because it is a Harris property. That's a mixed question. Now that we are having these mixed tribal casinos, can you sue the manager, i.e. Harris, in regular state court? Or because they are managing a tribal institution, are you limited to suing them in Indian court? It's not decided yet. Now, me and my broad-based casino nemesis perspective, you should always be able to sue them in state court. But do you know all of this Indian sovereign immunity has been called an accident by the United States Supreme Court?
Wow.
It was only an accident, but we will live with it and we will keep applying it. And yes, Indians can get away with pretty much anything commercially that they do on their own land. We can go off into the Native American political argument next.
Let's
and all of us will get politically incorrect, and or at least I probably will, and then I'll be persona non grata, and
do a lot more to become PNG on this show.
Yeah, but somebody'll conflate that into calling me a misogynist. That's the world we live in today.
Well,
you say one thing and all of a sudden you're not only a racist, you're a misogynist and you're a
unpatriotic.
Yeah.
That's right. And guilty of sexual harassment. Yes. Okay. Station casinos locally. Possibly at Red Rock. The person who sent this in wasn't sure which casino. They were playing a Fortune Pigou poker game. And the table and the player was not playing any of the bonuses. And he was dealt a 7-card straight flush. On a 7-card straight flush, the other players at the table get an envy bonus. So even though he's not going to get the bonus for having it, other players at the table get something. So he tried to negotiate with the other players and said, I want X percentage of what you get or I'm going to muck my hand. It's a small
Which bet. Means he's going to lose his own bet just to be a dick.
That's right. but
No, he's playing leverage and there's always a break point. And he is either going to calculate correctly or miscalculate.
So he, they didn't meet his price, and he did muck his hand.
Is this a true story? Do you know?
I'm assuming it is.
Okay, do we know what happened?
No.
No.
No, that's what we're talking about, too, is...
Well, he mucked his hand, so nothing happened.
No, because as Bob said earlier, he shows me... I see some of these questions in advance, and I looked at this one 3 times.
Yeah.
I think, and according to the hypothetical, he showed that he had it. Okay? That's going to be on the camera, too. What is the bet that those other people made? The bonus is awarded on a dealt straight flush. Right?
Oh, I see.
It was there!
You know, you think like a lawyer sometimes.
I don't think he's allowed. I don't think the casino's allowed to even let him muck out. And if that's the way the fight is going, and the casino's alluding that they're not going to pay the bonuses, I'd get gaming out there right at that time and hold up that table until an agent got out there and confirmed that there was a straight flush in that hand.
Ah,
because you're in the middle of a dispute that's worth over $500. And they have to notify gaming, the casino does. But I personally think that, you know, you hear me vilify casinos all the time, but I'm pretty sure that if this guy's playing this game at the table, some pit boss is going to come over and stop this from happening by saying, pay the bonuses.
Oh, how much is the bonus?
It doesn't matter.
It matters a lot to the casino.
It does matter a lot. I understand.
I mean, we see them taking shots. We talked about the number of shots.
But this shot's pretty sick, okay? I mean, as this was written to me, I can only think of what the card on the table says about these bonuses, the one you pick up and you read the rules. And I doubt if it says anything about that straight flush having to be a live hand at the time of payment. It just says, if somebody's dealt a straight flush, and he was, you win your bonus. End of story. Shouldn't it be? I'm looking at you, Bob.
I would think so, but I...
Sounds good to me.
Now, so, the players who had that bet out there, that should be their argument. On the player who was willing to muck his hand... to lose a relatively small bet because other people wouldn't pay him more, how should he have handled this?
How should he have handled it
in other words, he's not aware that just because he's dealt the hand that they're all going to get it. He's pretending like if he mucks his hand, they're not going to get it, and he may seriously believe that. So he's now taking a shot.
Yeah.
Is there anything illegal with that kind of shot?
Ah.
Well, he's not supposed to expose his hand, for one thing. I mean,
Pai Gow?
Yeah. You're not supposed to show your hand. You're not supposed to show the other players your cards. They make a big deal out of this all the time.
Okay. Seriously, and I'm thinking about Pai Gow, and I don't know. Is one guy showing his cards on the other side of the table going to have
an effect.
Yes, yes, yes. It all is. Players sharing information. Yes,
all players sharing all information. This is nominal information in the entire game.
Right, but they have a rule about you're not allowed to show your cards to the other players. And, you know, I'm sure casinos have taken shots at not paying people because you exposed your cards when you weren't supposed to or whatever. Like that freaking bad beat jackpot, the poker. But that's another topic. But, yeah, I'm sure that, you know, the casinos would work that into their argument, too, that he had broken the rules by showing his hand to other players.
Well, that's him breaking the rules. These other players didn't break the rules.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe he doesn't get paid muck or no muck.
Yeah, but I think the more interesting question is the next question you have on the list, which is, if I'm the player that has bet on the bonus, and I say, okay, I'll give you half, right? And the guy says, okay, and now we settle the hand, and now I say, screw
blow
you.
Me.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know.
I'm not sure which of those is cleaner.
do I have any jeopardy for that?
For reneging?
Yeah.
Just as near as I can tell, just your reputation.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you can't sue over the gambling debt. Well, wait a minute.
If Richard had promised to give me $10,000, which I'm assuming it's his half, and he finally says, forget it, I'm not going to do it.
Here we have
and
failure.
And now I'm sorry. Pop him one.
Well, that's always illegal, right?
I mean, is there any justification for me taking action against him?
Like popping him? No.
Yeah. You know, professionals turn their phones off when they start the recording.
Radio show, yeah.
Yeah, well, I have it on to vibrate, and it's vibrating loudly.
Okay, you're wondering if... Nah, I remember this question now. I don't... My personal thought on it, and again, legal opinion-wise, boy, there's about 15 things to test here in front of a court, and the court will know much less than I do. But that doesn't mean that they will be wrong or right, because whatever they say is right. I think he can tell the guy to pound sand for a number of reasons, one of which is failure of consideration. What is he giving him? He's giving him something that he has to have anyway, which is the hand. If he's giving up not mucking it, from our earlier analysis, not mucking it shouldn't have any effect on the bonuses, so it's not something of value.
They may not.
You want to make it weirder? They confirm with the dealer, and now the dealer pushes over half the bet.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, the dealer can't get involved in that. I mean,
well, yeah, you're right.
I mean, I like your idea of calling gaming because. Because then you can tell the guy, look, you know, now it's going to be a two-hour process and you can't leave because gaming is on the way.
Actually, he can leave.
But he can't leave the hand, right? What can he...
He can put his hand down and say, I don't care about it anymore. Essentially say, I'm mucking it regardless and walk away.
Yeah.
But if he does that, that doesn't mean it's mucked. Now it's sitting there. You can look at the gaming agent when he shows up and go, there's the cards. I want my money.
Right.
And if I were one of the other ones, there could be a lot of things I would want to do in the next 2 hours rather than sitting at the table. But
well, I don't know how much these bonuses pay, but I mean, a 7-card straight flush is a hard hand to get. I would assume that would pay a lot.
Yes.
So, yeah. You know, we should know these things. People think we know stuff about gambling. So,
all right. Since Richard doesn't know anything about gambling, we're going to do some commercials now. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In January, Monday through Thursday, 3 a.m. through 3 a.m., it's a $500,000 spin-to-win promotion. Earn 500 slot points or 2,000 video poker points, and you spin a virtual wheel right at your machine. Prizes are all points from 2,500 through 100,000. Which is worth $750 through $300, or free play from $5 to $100. you may earn up to 4 spins per day. On Martin Luther King Day, there will be a $32,000 hot seat promotion from 8 a.m. to midnight, where approximately every 3 minutes, one player randomly receives $100 in free play. This will be in addition to the regular spin-to-win promotion on the same day. The free video poker classes are getting near. They're going to be on Tuesdays beginning January 9th. First class is Jacks or Better. The schedule may be found on bobdancer.com. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. Game of the week is Ultimate X. Ultimate X is 10 coins per line game, where each successful score on this hand earns you multipliers for next hand. Strategies for several of the pay schedules may be found on the Wizard of Odds website. I'll be teaching the 9-6 double-double bonus 10-play version of this game on Tuesday, February 13th at the South Point. All right, we're back to Bob Nersessian.
My turn with a question, if I might.
Go for it.
Well, I something came up the other day. This is not even necessarily gaming related. Well, it's not, but you guys are both math people. And I read a media headline that said this: 500% fewer people support attacking Syria than supported attacking Iraq. Okay. What the hell is 500% less?
Well, it's clearly more than 499% less.
Yeah. Yeah, I do they mean
I have no idea.
Yeah, 20%? Yeah.
The sentence is nonsensical, right?
Right.
Okay.
Anytime you see the media writing anything that has any kind of math in it, just assume it's wrong.
I did have a case years ago where an accounting program came up with a negative percent as part of its printout. And I was attacking it. And I asked the expert on the stand, can you please give me an example of a negative percent? And he was like, and I said, and you're supporting this program as something that we should rely on? So, yeah, but there's really no such thing, right? 500% less? I just want to, okay, good.
Good.
All right. Sorry to digress, but.
All right.
Maybe somebody can write in and tell you guys on an email what it means.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's wrong to call it fake news.
Yeah.
All right. Going on to civil forfeiture.
That wasn't in your little questions.
It was.
Really?
It was.
Must have been on the last page Richard didn't read either.
No, I realized I had read it. It was the link that I didn't follow for that other question.
Can you ask Bob Nersessian if it might be better to carry chips in a car instead of cash, considering civil forfeiture?
Arguably, but only because the seizing authorities in their malfeasance may not recognize exactly what they're dealing with, or may think that for some reason. Actually, I can think of another reason to tell them, or that it would be make sense. Don't take it. You can't collect it. This is valueless to you. These are from Caesars, and you're not a patron. You're a cop in the middle of Arizona. And if the Gila County Treasurer's Office tries to turn in $60,000 in chips at Caesars Palace, there's a gaming regulation that says they can't pay you.
Yeah, you know, most cops, I think, are just going to take first and ask questions later.
Well, yeah, sure. And you know what? They might even get around.
I think it is better to have chips than, because they may not realize the value.
It's just that. It is, There's no real reason why it would be different. A cashier's check in your pocket is probably even a better way, mostly because they'll never see it. And yes, there's a CRT when you buy it and a CRT when you cash it, but you know what? CTR. Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. CRT is a railroad company, isn't it? A CTR, but everybody over analyzes what those are about. CTRs don't do anything. It's just one giant building in the middle of Michigan somewhere outside of Novi that has billions and billions of CTRs in it. or a database like that. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
I've always liked cashier's checks or checks moving money.
Yeah, but you're not afraid to give your name in a casino.
Well, but you don't buy the cashier's check at a bank before. But if it's a lot of money, that's difficult. I mean, nowadays you can just send Bitcoin if you don't need the actual cash. But I've told this story on the air, I think, before. But I was traveling with a teammate who had a double Ziploc bag full of chips about the size of a football. And he would put it in the bin at the airport to go through the X-ray machine. And the TSA agent picked it up and said, "Are those chips?" And he said, "Yeah, they're like poker chips, you know, poker chips." And the guy looked and he said, "Are those all $500 chips?" And he said, "Yeah, I'll sell you one for $100." And he just threw it at him and goes, "Get out of here." So, yeah, it was a total bluff and it worked and, you know.
Oh, my gosh. This TSA guy should have emptied his wallet with the dude. Yeah. Yeah, but I think it all comes back to what you're saying with the, it's just something that is outside of their norm. They're looking for cash. They're looking for drugs. They are not looking for chips. So when they see them, there's no endorphins that go off in their head that says, "This is for me."
Jackpot.
And this might lead into the other one you were talking about with the SARs, Bob.
Okay.
Great. I let him do a question I don't know the answer to.
Yeah.
I recently noticed an uptick in the filing of SARs, suspicious activity reports, by casinos, presumably because of increased pressure by the federal government. Is there any recourse for a player that knows a casino put false information on the SAR?
First of all, how does he know there's an SAR?
That is not part of this question.
Yeah, when I saw the question, too, I wondered that, too. I was thinking this guy must work in a casino to know that they're filing, because they're not supposed to tell you that they're filing an SAR.
If he's a gambler and he knows there's SARs and you want recourse, well, first of all, you can't sue him. You can't do anything like that. The SARs are sacrosanct. There's immunities everywhere. If somebody does an SAR and lies outright on it, you can't even sue them. Okay? It is worse than the 1099 scam, where if I wanted to make Richard's life miserable in 2018, I send him $1,400,000 1099 from a fictitious person saying that that was income he got. That was something that has been going on.
I would send that to the guy who had the 7-card straight flush that mucked the hand. You know?
Okay. Well, you do it under not your social security number, too. But so that's one way that those things go on. But that kind of thing goes on. And that you can sue over as a libel suit. The SARs, a false SAR, doesn't have the same remedies behind it. You can't sue. What can you do? Well, if he knows there's an SAR and it's got false information on it, the one thing he can do right off the top is turn that casino in for failing to keep the SAR confidential. All right? I understand that the feds take that very seriously. I have been involved in litigation where I have gotten SARs in a document request. They're not supposed to turn them over. They are even privileged from civil discovery about a gambler. But they show up. And then you should see the casinos try to claw back that SAR because they're worried about the feds coming down on them for having actually released and let it be known that there was an SAR. They go absolutely nuts, and it's leveraged towards settlement. Letting out SAR information has consequences. So if he wants his pound of flesh, he can go down that line. The other thing you can do is write your congressman. I'm dead serious on this while you're laughing. The idea that people can lie about you and cause the federal government to come down on you like a ton of bricks is pretty ridiculous. And yet, that's what the law passed by your representatives in Washington said they can do and that they can get away with it. What a load. Okay. Now, filing false SARs, you can also turn them in, and that does have some consequences, but I am not aware of any prosecutions for it. And as to the crackdown, or the uptick, Treasury has informed casinos, or whoever it is that's running that program. Anyway, I think it's the Secretary of the Treasury. Her underlings or his underlings have issued certain directives for what has to be or when an SAR is required, and they just plain lie to the casinos about what the statutes say. I got a compliance officer to admit on the stand that, no, you're right. It doesn't say that we have to do this. It doesn't even say we should do this. But we got a letter from Treasury that says we should, so we're doing it.
Wow.
Hard to argue with that.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, they're the 800-pound gorilla, and they're also the ones with guns, and we're not. You know, a lot of my political bent sort of comes through these shows.
It does. It does. Moving on to another question. One of our listeners says he's a novice gambler. Earlier this year, he was in Vegas and he bet on baseball games. They insisted on ID to take my bets. 7 bets, all less than $1,000 each. Did I really need to give ID?
If you wanted to make the bets, yeah. You could walk away. Okay? This is not a problem. The casino can ask for ID whenever it wants to. And on your refusal, they can refuse to do business with you. There's no question on that end. The more problematic issue is when you hand in chips and they ask for ID. Now you have a right to privacy, and your transaction with them is complete. They are now in a position where they have one rule. Promptly pay. Okay? That's their only obligation, and there is nothing in the law that says anywhere that they have a right to compel ID. Arguably, but believe it or not, it's not really in there with the CTR idea. Yeah, that time I said it right. With the CTR idea, they can require identification if it's more than $10,000, but that's a misnomer too. That's not in there either. Okay. Their obligation is to fill out a CTR that says, if I'm looking at Bob Dancer right now, 6'1", gray hair, 45-ish.
Bless you, my dear. Bless you.
Well, I want to come back.
Yeah.
And then turn in that CTR, because there's nothing under the law, and my last check in FinCEN, including FinCEN, that says anybody can require you to produce ID at any time, and there's plenty of authority out there that your right to anonymity is a right.
So at the Silverton Casino, they would have,
Do that if it's a CTR thing, because all you're going to do is create a world of hurt. And that Treasury.
Not a CTR.
What? No.
But he was talking about. Isn't in the law, don't try to get away with not giving him the ID.
Because when you do that, you will have
treasury agents standing in front of you, and you will, by the end of the day, be in God's country in handcuffs, and then only later, somebody like me will have to sort it out for, oh, I'll charge you $100,000. That was nice. Just show them your ID.
At Silverton, if you get a, in the regular part of the casino, the machines, if it's, the jackpot's going to go over $1,200, including accumulated credits, it just spits out a ticket. But in the high limit room, it can go up however far it is. But if you try to cash that ticket at the casino cage of $1,250, they will insist on ID to cash the ticket.
I have been in that situation. Call gaming. Tell them there's a gaming dispute. They show up. They will check your ID. They will not give your name to the casino. If it's an ID check for age, they'll just confirm it's age. If it's an ID check for any other reason, they're going to look at the casino and go, we have regulations that say you promptly pay. Pay the man. Okay? And if you have an
age... It hasn't happened. I mean, I...
Maybe you have to have me standing next to you because I come with the actual regulation in my hand. I've done this a number of times for players. And I've shown the agent the regulation. And I've said, have them tell you why they don't pay. And they don't have a reason. And every single time we've walked out with the money. Other times, my player clients have walked away. They have hired me to get... Now, this doesn't make a lot of sense. It costs them $2,000 to pick up that $8,000. So now they're netting $6,000 rather than just showing a driver's license. But I've done that, too.
No, I had a friend where it was like $3,000. And they called gaming. And gaming came. And not only did gaming give them the information about who the guy was after he expressly asked the agent, like...
That's an agent that didn't understand the law yet, yeah, and nobody had told him.
And then he didn't get paid right away. It had to go... He had to take the case back, and there had to be some determination made or something like that. And I think it wasn't until a couple of weeks later that he got a decision from gaming that they had to pay him.
Huh.
This is Nevada?
Yeah, this was downtown Las Vegas.
Okay, well...
Recently?
I think this was maybe 2 years ago or something.
I've heard that story anecdotally, too, and you've said you've seen it. My experience is different. I have seen gaming literally come out, check ID, look at the people and say, yeah, he's over 21, and then pay the man.
Yeah, maybe it's because you were there.
I maybe.
Yeah.
They
tend to be more on the side of the casino.
I'll give you this. I collected on a $5,000 chip for somebody else in the Blackjack Hall of Fame just by showing up or by on a phone call and then showing up with them, and then they paid over the $5,000 and he never had to show ID. I'm not saying that this is a good practice. I mean, you know, it's all a lot simpler and cheaper to show the ID.
Yeah.
It depends on how much you want to keep that secret. Now,
Depends on the backstory.
On slot tickets, where players are going to have their card in there anyway.
Yeah, they can just go look at the video. Yeah,
I mean, you're fighting a losing. There's no reason to keep your ID if you're playing slots or video poker. But on table games, there could be reasons why you don't want the casino.
I understand.
Very good. All right, Bob Nersessian, we have lots of questions left, but so you're going to have to come back and do another show, even though you've been trying to get out of that. This one is about passports. I've heard it is not illegal to carry a fake passport of a country that no longer exists. Is this true?
Generally, I would say yes. Okay?
But there was a couple negatives in there, so it's not illegal. So, in other words, if I wanted...
Like I've said in the past, on past shows, this is one of those circumstances where even if it's not illegal, you may find yourself in a jail cell, and later, some court, when you sue for false imprisonment, some court is going to say, No, you had a fake passport. That's probable cause. They were allowed to arrest you. The fact that they couldn't find a crime doesn't mean that they did anything wrong. Okay? So there are downsides there. I will tell you this, and I don't suggest, in fact, I would counsel against it. I had a client who was using a fake passport from a country that does exist. China.
Uh-huh.
Okay. People's PRC. Okay. And she got caught with that passport at a casino. That night, I was there. Homeland Security was there. Treasury was there. The Secret Service was there. And the LVMPD were there. And we're all in the back room. And I'm sitting there going, that ain't a crime. And I've got eight cops from four different agencies going, of course it's a crime.
Yeah, what kind of idiot are you? Of course it is.
And I'm going, what crime is it? Okay? They couldn't come up with one. Because the fake passport law under the United States Code is a fake U.S. passport.
Right.
Okay? She didn't have a U.S. passport of any kind, nature, or whatever. Okay? They kept six figures of her money, but did not arrest her that night. And then they tried to forfeit the money, and I went in and pointed out that there was no crime. And they did return the money, but I am...
Wait, who was trying to keep the money? The casino or one of the agencies?
The casino took the money, held it at the request of Treasury, and then it was seized by the IRS.
So everybody was
trying to... What a mess, yes. The IRS came in after the fact, and they're the ones who grabbed the money. And I'm dealing with two U.S. attorneys over this attempt at forfeiture. And, yeah, I got that money back. I can't tell you that I would the next time.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm not even going to say that I was able to convince them of my position on the law that there was nothing here that would give you reasonable cause to suspect money laundering or illegal activity. But they just decided it wasn't worth, I think they decided more than anything, it ain't worth the fight rather than and therefore take the money back rather than turn it into a long drawn out federal case, because I showed the metal that I would fight it all the way. And that isn't anything anybody wants to do. Yeah. So I'm not saying I even won on the law. I'm just saying they gave the money back, but don't ever count on that. And I don't think you'll find an attorney that can, I'll pat myself on the back here, do the twists and turns through the statute that I had to do to show that there was nothing illegal with what she did.
All right. Our final question from the same listener. It says, is it true that TSA can't legally open a sealed envelope as long as it made it through X-ray without setting it off? In other words, if you have $20,000 in an envelope, with or without a stamp on it, but it's sealed, can they force you to open it?
I think the answer is it depends. If they do what is common and say that that dog that hasn't moved or even blinked in 15 minutes that is sitting next to the envelope with a handler, and the handler goes, yeah, he hit on the envelope. Yeah, they can open it.
What,
or they can hold it, or they can hold it.
US
they
mail?
Can hold it and get a warrant. I don't know. That's what they should do.
Hmm.
But it also depends from the situation you've described on the citizenship of the various persons involved. You are at a border that has different effects.
Right, right.
Depending on where you are and what this TSA agent is. But arguably, you're at a border, or you're in a port,
There's different laws that go across all these different things when it comes to search and seizure. I would not count on them not opening the envelope and putting an address on it and a stamp. Maybe a canceled stamp. I mean, maybe if it was actually mailed through the mail, then it's pretty hard to argue that it hasn't already been vetted.
Well, also, opening U.S. mail is a major deal. They can't. I don't think they can do that without a warrant, right?
I don't think they can do any of this without a warrant, but they do it all the time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of case law out there. One of the big cases is they had the guy in the back room at the airport going, well, yeah, you can leave or you can open your bag. But either way, we're getting a warrant. So open your bag now or else. It'll go lighter on you if you, you know, they have ways of making you do the things you don't want to do, and then they get them done, and it's really frustrating. I know we're on the radio. Listeners can't see that expression I just made, or not even on the radio. We're on the internet, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It was one of his better expressions. I can tell you that. Thank you, Bob Nersessian.
And this clean off your glasses after that expression.
It's been fun. We hope to have you back again.
Yeah, it's getting more and more doubtful.
I
can't wait.
Well, good. We won't have time to interview until immediately. Thank you very much. Richard, thank you. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.